And I think it's really good to get punched in the face every now and then to grow some balls. To build trust, you always have to be completely honest and transparent. When I'm talking to a client, it's actually the same way as I'm talking to you. There's no difference in there, and that's genuine. I think Dubai is one of the best places to be.
We work hard. We think hard. We hold hard to high standards. If we do this consistently, we will be happy and productive. And those were instances where we fail, which we will be all right. Not only because we'll know in our hearts that we did our best, but because we have the strength and character to endure setbacks on our journey. We'll have the determination and the balance to get back up and keep going.
Interesting.
There's a book, Discipline is Destiny, written by Ryan Holiday. And I would like to gift you this book.
Oh, thank you.
As a welcome present.
Oh, thank you.
It's a book that is about stoicism and about discipline and the importance of it. And for someone that has achieved a lot, I'm sure that discipline has been one of the main factors in your journey.
Definitely.
And I mean, it's always more to learn, so I hope you get some value out of this book.
Thank you so much. That's really kind of you. Actually, so this is a self-improvement book, right?
Yeah.
So I'm going to be very honest. I'm not a big fan of self-improvement books and self-help gurus. But there is one thing that really appeals to me, and this is the title, Discipline is Destiny, because I think discipline is very important. And one of your questions that you sent to me was, what skills do you think are important for younger people to develop? And I think building character, discipline. I think discipline is one of the most important skills to have. All the other things you can learn, but discipline is really something you have to train yourself in very early, at a very early age. I think it's very important. So thank you.
It's a pleasure.
I think I can relate to it.
Before you continue watching, please consider subscribing and hitting the notification bell so you never miss a future upload. What are some ways that people can develop discipline at a young age? Because obviously, like, for myself, it was, for example, sports that taught me always be on time, otherwise you're going to do push-ups.
Mm-hmm.
School, for example, also, in some way, it pushes you. You have deadlines, you get mm-hmm. grades, you pass or you don't pass. And also work, like if you have to deliver a video at a certain date, then you have to also stick to that. So what were some ways that you build up your discipline, and what ways would you recommend for people to do that?
What sports did you do?
I did taekwondo.
Taekwondo.
Yeah.
So I'm really big into martial arts. I used to do a lot of kickboxing, MMA, and now I do Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And I think for me, combat sports or sports in general are a very important factor in creating discipline. And I think I can only speak for myself that combat sports is really good because, like you said, when you show up too late for training, you're going to do push-ups. Or even worse, you have to spar with that one guy who is always into competitions, whereas you are just an amateur or whatever. So I think for me, the kickboxing has told me a lot about life, about discipline in general, and how important it is that if indeed you put in consistently the work, that you will get results, and then it will translate. You will, if you're a smart guy and you think about it, will also translate into the other aspects of your life. So, from sports, the discipline you learn in sports, you will also put into practice at school or at work or in your business or maybe even in your social life. So, for me, sports is one of the most, I would say, the most important factor. It was the most important factor for me in creating discipline.
Do you believe that people should put themselves deliberately in high-pressure situations, such as a kickboxing ring, to build that up? Because that's what you do when you're doing sports, right? Like of course, you want to learn the techniques and the names.
I think it's good.
Yeah.
It's good to be, but I think it's good to get in a ring to get punched in the face. I think that is good. I think Mike Tyson once said something like, everyone talks shit until you get punched in the mouth. And I think it's really good to get punched in the face every now and then to experience this harshness, to build a little bit character, to grow some balls. I think that's really, that's really, yeah, it's really important.
It's humbling, right?
It's humbling, yeah, definitely. Because, you know, combat sports is the closest I think we can get in our daily lives to a life or death situation. Because even if you're sparring with a guy and it's friendly and you're just training, if the guy beats you, it means that in the street, if it was a real fight, he would beat you as well. And that's really humbling. It really makes you think. It's not even about you losing, but it makes you think. It makes you feel maybe a little bit vulnerable. You know, it makes you realize that you're not maybe that tough guy out there. You can also be humbled by someone. So, yeah.
Is that one of the reasons that you went from kickboxing, which is you're standing, to jiu-jitsu, which is completely different, where you're always getting grappled, you're on the ground.
Yeah.
You're getting, like, it's very different. Like, I have done jiu-jitsu once and it was so uncomfortable because with taekwondo, we're always trained to keep distance.
Yeah. Different dynamics.
It's very different. Like, yeah. Did you do that? Was that a decision that you made yourself to put yourself again in a very uncomfortable situation? Or were you just interested in sports? Because I'm sure that's also one of the reasons.
For me, it was back then, and I'm talking about, I think, 5 or 6 years ago, I moved to Brazil. So I did an exchange for my studies in Brazil. So I was living there, and of course, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is very popular over there. So I thought, well, why not give it a try? And before, I already did some MMA, and I already noticed that, well, I was, you know, fighting. I could do the kickboxing part very well, but when it came to wrestling or to the grappling, it was, you know, I couldn't do anything. It's a different dynamic. It's a whole different ball game. So I already had a sort of experience with Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And then I moved to Brazil and I was like, well, why not develop this skill while I'm here? And I liked it so much that when I came back to Amsterdam, I continued training. And now even here in Dubai, I train Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Have you ever competed in martial arts?
Yeah. In kickboxing, I did. In Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, I did. Not that much, because when I started doing Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu here in Amsterdam, I was already finishing my studies and starting my career at Amsterdam Vintage Watches. So I got very busy with my career, with doing business. But yeah, I did some competitions. I like to do that. I think it's also important to, when you train, to train for something. I mean, you don't have to. Of course, you can just train for yourself or to become fit or whatever. But I think when you do martial arts, it's nice to every now and then test your skills. And the best way to do that is actually to compete with someone else.
Were you scared before you went into the ring?
There's always this tension. I'm not sure if it's being scared, but yeah, you're always excited. There's tension. You don't know what's going to happen. But on the other hand, there is also confidence, because you know you have trained for this. You know that the reason that you're competing against this guy is because you are on the same level, more or less. So yeah, it's a mixture of feelings, of confidence, and a bit of, yeah, you feel the tension, yeah.
You briefly mentioned at the beginning that there are some skills that you think are important to learn in your 20s. And we mentioned discipline already. We haven't really talked about what you do yet, but
no.
I would love for you to speak some more about those skills and how those have helped you in your business, and perhaps also talk about your business a little bit.
Yeah. So when I go back to my younger self, so 10 years ago, something that I really experienced, and I'm not seeing myself as a big inspiration for the young guys nowadays, but something that I really had to face as an obstacle was the confusion. And I think we already talked a little bit about this. Nowadays, and also in my childhood, there are because of social media, you are exposed to 100s, and that's actually why I said I'm not a big fan of self-improvement and self-help gurus, because it's a business model. The self-improvement business is really, it's a business. And there's nothing wrong with that. But especially if you're younger, you're sensitive to this, and you get these messages from, you know, self-improvement gurus from there and there, telling about their success stories and saying you should do this and you should do that in order to become successful. For me, this was very confusing. And what I think is important for as a skill to develop in your 20s is to be able to count on yourself, to be able to listen to yourself, and also to be able to block everything, all the noise around you. Does it make sense what I'm saying?
It does. It does a lot. And I think you're also, like, for example, with social media, like, we were just on the balcony right here, and we were saying, like, I asked you, are there any, like, downsides to Dubai? And you were like, yeah. What was the quote that you
lost
you
in up? The sauce.
Yeah.
That's what I call it.
That. And there was, like, a bright red Lamborghini driving by, and the noise was just going up the buildings. I think that, like, in a way, could give some people, like, a wrong impression of success, and they will, like, chase, or they will, like, have, like, materialistic goals, which are not wrong.
No.
But it's not everything. And I think when you see that, like, it puts some kind of, like, pressure on you. Imagine you're Holland, you're driving a small car, you have a regular job, and you're like, oh, they're so far ahead. And that's, like, in the best case. Like, on social media, you can get lost in all kinds of different rabbit holes that are not good for you.
All the things you see, all the superficial things you see, so the people with the Lamborghinis and the clothes and the bottles in the clubs. You know, it's very, especially when you're young, it's very tempting to go after that and to think that is the ultimate goal, but it's not. And also, if you combine this with, you know, all these people telling you, yeah, you should, if you want this Lamborghini, you should do this, and you should read a book, and you should meditate, and whatever. It's all confusing. Actually, what it, for me, look, I'm not there yet, but I can only tell what I have experienced until now. And I think I'm pretty okay. I'm doing very well. I'm on my way. What I think actually is the most important thing is, like I said, listening to yourself, being able to count on yourself. And how can you be able to count on yourself? It's discipline. If you make an appointment with yourself, or you say to yourself, I don't know, I wake up at 6 in the morning. Keeping yourself to that appointment makes you accountable to yourself. And if you do this, if you, you know, implement this in your life and you start doing this more, and all the agreements you make with yourself, all the promises you make with yourself, you keep to them, it means that you will learn how to count on yourself, actually. I think this is the most important factor.
I think what you're referring to in a way is also compound interest, right? Because you're, like, it's basically getting 1% better each day. If you tell yourself that you're going to do something the night before, doing it the next day already separates you from a large percent of people.
Mm-hmm.
And if this, for example, if you would get, like, 1% better each day, like, it's funny because the last guest said this. It's like, if you get 1% better each day for 1 year, at the end of the year, you've gotten 365% better.
Definitely, it goes in small
which
steps.
Which is incredible. And I think, like, the biggest hardship with that is patience. Also being able to wait, see the right opportunities, know when it's your turn to speak, like in a metaphorical way. Yeah. Like, you have to wait for your time. And you should also put yourself in a position where you can experience that.
Yeah. Well, that's true. Patience is indeed a very important aspect. And because I remember one of the questions is, I think you asked, what would you say to the younger Ramon. And literally, the only thing I would say is it will all be fine. Because it's really like this. If you build character, so discipline, which means you work hard, it doesn't matter what you do, by the way. But this is another thing, because when I was young, all the successful people told me, yeah, you should work hard. And I was like, yeah, but on what? What should I work hard on? I didn't know, because I was just, you know, doing my school, and I had a part-time job, and I was like, on what should I work hard? But it doesn't matter on what you're working. But if you create work ethic, character, discipline again, work ethic. So it doesn't matter if you're working in a supermarket or whatever. But if you, this is what I did, huh? I can only speak for myself. If you perform your job with the utmost care, like if you're really doing it like your life depends on it, you create work ethic. And it doesn't matter what you do. If you do this, you work hard, eventually, I think it will all be fine.
So you're talking about your younger self and the advice that you would give the younger self. Mm-hmm. What were some jobs that you were doing at the beginning that helped you develop that work ethic that now you have been able to translate into the business ventures that you're pursuing now?
Sales, yeah. So what I did, I had a sales job and I was selling memberships for charity organizations like Amnesty International. So we literally rang the doorbell. We were those annoying guys. While you were having dinner, the doorbell rang and we were there like, hey, we're here for charity organization and you want to become a member. But this is cold sales. And cold sales is really good for developing character, because, man, you don't want to know how often people smashed the door in my face or yelled at me or were even cursing and stuff. You had to go through this all. But in the end, when you closed like five memberships of like the hundreds of people or the hundreds of doors you passed by, it was a great feeling because you made money. It paid very well. And I think because of my sales job, I really learned how to be persistent, to proceed, to go through. And next to that, I always tried to keep multiple jobs at a time. So I was having my sales job, but next to that, I was also was working at Domino's and delivering pizzas, for example. I think for me, this was because a lot of people, they joke about this, right? Ah, you're a pizza delivery guy, Domino's. But for me, it was really my sales job was really like intense, because you really have to be prepared to go out there in the rain, in the cold, it doesn't matter, and ring that doorbell. And being a delivery guy was like really easy. Was like really, for me, there was a balance between those two. And I always tried to keep those two at the same time. So I could, if I wanted to work and make money, but in a relaxing way, I did my pizza job. And every Saturday, it was always on Saturday, the sales job, I knew I had to be prepared to go through a lot of shit. But in the end, I will make a lot of money. But my sales job was definitely very helpful.
It's a good skill that everyone should develop, right? Like we were talking about different skills, patience, discipline. And then if we can of course, there are many different niches. Like you can go in all different branches, but sales is always a good quality to have, right? Like being able to
definitely
persuade someone to do something in a good way, of course, not manipulative. It can be useful for everything, right?
Definitely, sales is everything, actually. I mean, when I'm talking to you, even though it's maybe subconscious, I'm selling. And when you were approaching me for the podcast, you were selling. Yeah. Everything is sales. It's also very important in networking. Sales. Because what you're actually doing is selling yourself or selling your company or the business you're in or whatever.
Could you talk about the study you were doing? Because you were doing something that was related to business, right?
International business, yeah.
Do you feel like you had a realistic approach to sales in that study, or did it not cover it at all?
No, didn't cover sales that much. To be honest, if I look back at my studies, it was not really... international business is very general. So there are many subjects you get taught every day, accounting, marketing, management, cross-cultural analysis. So many different subjects. But in the end, I felt a little bit like a jack of all trades, but a master of none. So it was not really, my studies were not really helpful. It's better, I think, if you study, because I do think that studying could be very helpful. But I think it's better to choose a niche, to choose something specific instead of something very general. Because in the end, if you do something very general, you don't learn that much of something. Just it's all very broad.
And you ended up choosing a niche, right?
Yeah. And I even chose a niche in a niche, I think. When people ask me, what do? I always say, I find watches no one else can find. I think this is, it sounds very cool. So what I basically do is I'm a watch dealer. I buy and sell watches, but not regular watches. I buy and sell vintage watches. And not the common vintage watches, but the very special and rare ones. So the vintage watches that I deal in are, for example, the ones that are limited to 3 pieces in the world, for example. And this is really what I like to do. This is my niche.
What is the most crazy thing you've done to get your hands on a very special watch that one of your clients wanted sourced?
To be honest, I mean, watch dealing is adventurous, but it's not that crazy. It's not like that I had to go to... I don't know, India, to a small village where this guy was with a very special watch who had it for generations. No, it's not like that. But what I do on a daily basis is, or not on a daily basis, but on a weekly basis, is I travel a lot. So sometimes for a watch, I need to go to Italy or to the States or to Switzerland or whatever place. I get to meet a lot of people, like dealers of watches, but also private people. So people who have a watch, who has been in the watch has been in the family for generations. This is the kind of stuff that I do. So it's kind of adventurous because you go to a lot of places, you meet a lot of people, you do a lot of stuff. But it's not like that. It's very crazy.
I mean, compared to other jobs, it's still very different, right? Because you get you have to interact with people. You're not buying a watch out of a machine,
a factory.
You
cannot order a batch from a factory and sell it to another company. No, I have to deal with watch dealers, with private people, with collectors on one end to buy and also to sell. I have to deal with private people, collectors, and watch dealers again.
Yeah.
But these are often no companies. These are people who are either collecting watches and want to get rid of something, or watch dealers who have found a watch somewhere in I don't know where and want to sell it to me. And on the other hand, people who, you know, collect watches, want to buy watches, have clients for watches. So it's very dynamic.
Have you always known that you wanted to work in the watch industry?
No. No, to be honest, I've always liked watches, but it was only when I was watching my favorite TV show, The Sopranos, when I noticed the guy was wearing a watch on his wrist, the main character, Tony Soprano, was wearing a watch on his wrist, and I was like, oh, that's a cool watch, what's that? And I figured it was a gold Rolex, so I didn't know shit about watches, so I went to the Rolex website, and I looked it up, I was like, huh? So this is the gold Rolex that he is wearing, but it's It's different. It's not the same. It's different. And then I figured, oh, hey, wait, the series is from the 90s. So maybe this is an older model of the one that I saw. And I was like, but I like the older model actually more than the modern one. And then I fell into the vintage watch trap, and I started doing my research, and I really liked it. And that's actually where my interest for vintage watches came. If you would tell me like 10 years ago, you're going to be a watch dealer, I would be like, you're crazy.
And then you started working in Amsterdam, right? How was that? And how did that come about?
So it's a good question, because this actually is what I was telling before. If you work hard, opportunities will come on your path. And often they will come from places you cannot foresee. You don't know where they're coming from. It's always unexpected. So I was finishing my studies, international business.
Your bachelor?
My bachelor. And I had a part-time job in sales, but this was another company than I was talking about earlier. It was a call center. And there was an intern over there, and he liked watches, and he noticed that I also like, you know, nice clothes, cars, and watches. So, you know, we sometimes had conversations about this, and then he told me, do you know Amsterdam Vintage Watches? And I was like, no, what's this? He said, you should look it up. I think you will like it. And I was like, okay, whatever. But then later on, I looked it up on YouTube, and I was like, oh, this is actually quite a cool company. And then a month later, I was just, you know, scrolling on YouTube, and suddenly this video of Amsterdam Vintage Watches popped up. And the video, the title was, I believe, something like, We Want You. So I clicked on the video, and it was basically, they were hiring. I was like, whoa, it's actually quite cool to work at this company. I don't know shit about watches, but man, this could be quite interesting. So I applied. I had to record a video. I had to sell myself, so selling again. And I was invited to meet Jasper. And there was like, from the start, there was a click. Like, it was between me and Jasper, it was like we already knew each other for a very long time, but it was actually the first time that we met. And well, we had this conversation, and a couple of weeks later, they told me, hey, man, we really want you to work with us. And at the same time, my other colleague, Rutger, the tall guy, he applied for the same job as me. And Jasper was like, but both these guys are very good. So they were like, fuck it, we hired them both. So Rutger and me joined Amsterdam Vintage Watches. And from there on, that was actually my first experience in the watch business.
So what was it like to work in Amsterdam? Because I think in one of the interviews that you've done, you've mentioned we had the game in Lock in Amsterdam.
Mm-hmm.
What was it like to work there? Because it was a pretty renowned company, and it still is.
It still is, yeah. I think it's even bigger than you think, than you can imagine. Because when you look in the world of watches, Amsterdam Vintage Watch is an established name. So one of my business partner here in Dubai, we actually have an office in New York as well. We have a business over there as well, also watches. And he goes there to the Diamond District, where all the traditional watch dealers are. And even they, in the Diamond District in New York, they know Amsterdam Vintage Watches. He always tells me this, that I always ask them, do you know Amsterdam Vintage Watches? And they're like, oh, yeah, the guys from Amsterdam, yeah, they're pretty cool. Yeah, they're doing all right. So it's real. It's bigger than most people can imagine. In the world of watches, I think Amsterdam Vintage Watches is really among the top five dealers. And yeah, what was it like? It was crazy. It was, I'd never experienced something like this, because I'm from a very humble background. And then all of a sudden, I'm here in this luxury, and there's watches and people with money, and And the first time I sold a watch, like my first sale at Amsterdam Famous Watches, I sold a watch of, it was only 5,000 euros or 4,000 euros or something. I was like, whoa, this guy has 4,000 euros to spend on a watch. I was like, this is crazy. And little did I know that now I'm selling watches for 1 million plus. It's really crazy, actually, if I think back of it. But yeah, it was crazy working at Amsterdam Famous Watches because I was not used to that life and that lifestyle. It was all completely new for me. You know, all the trips that we did, all the social media and the sort of fame and the money and everything. It was crazy.
What were some ingredients that make that place so special?
Trust. A very tight team of people who trust each other. Still, Jasper and Rutger are like my brothers. Even though I'm here in Dubai with my own business, I'm still very cool with these guys. We're doing it as a sort of partnership. I think trust is the most important factor. And also, this is also something very important, because to build trust, you have to be honest. And I think what I learned at Amsterdam Famous Watches is to always be very honest. You know, Jasper, for example, the videos that he's talking about rappers and their watches and sometimes even the fake watches. But he really is like that. He's just an honest guy. If he doesn't like the watch that you're wearing, you're asking him whether you like it, and he doesn't like it, he said no. He's like that. And this is something that I had to learn over there, that, you know, you have to be, to build trust, you always have to be completely honest and transparent.
Is that one of the other skills that you would ask, that you would add to the list?
Being honest?
Yeah. Because I think, like, in a way, especially in today's world, like, telling white lies, like, just small lies that compound over time, mm-hmm. like, that's a big danger. Mm-hmm. At least that's the way I've experienced myself. Like, for example, with my parents or school, every time I, like, changed, like, a very small detail in a story, it bit me back, like, 1 year later, 2 years later.
Yeah.
And I think having a habit of always being completely transparent is very valuable, and it's something that you don't see very often, at least
yeah.
my experience.
You don't see it very often. It's true. And I think it's very important. And it's something you have to learn. Because in the end, if you're always completely transparent and honest, some people will not like you, but at least everybody will know what they can expect from you.
What was one of the lessons that you've learned from working there? I'm sure there are many. But what is something that really stuck to you? Because it's a very special company. I'm sure there's something that you must have picked up along the lines that now you actively think about.
I learned a lot about watches in specific, of course, but also about doing business. I learned a lot. Sales, about closing deals.
Also psychology, if I may ask.
Like
human interactions, like for example, if someone is interested in something, how can you like continue on that, like having a conversation? Like I noticed, like I've talked with a lot of guests, but
mm-hmm.
you can continuously look me in the eyes. That's something that I've learned from my dad, but you also do it, like it's something mm-hmm. that I notice, like some small things that just in human interactions, like I'm sure that also
was yeah. one of
the things.
The most important thing I learned maybe is, and I hope this will make sense, is when you got the goods, you don't have to sell anything. And it's actually, because it's a bit contradictory, because in the beginning of our conversation, I was saying selling is a very important skill. But when you know what's sellable, so when you got the goods, when you got a product of high quality, you don't actually have to sell it. Because you got the goods, the people will come to you. So for me, the most important lesson I learned from this is when you have a good, trustworthy, high-quality product, there's no need to push or to rush or to sell, because this will actually move your client away from you.
And also long-term business, right? Because I think Amsterdam Vintage Watches is very known for their reputation. They've built a long reputation along the years, and they've probably done that by treating every client as equal. Every relationship that they start is something that they give 100%. Is that also something that you think is important, building a good reputation?
Reputation is everything. It's very important to be credible, because when you're credible, you're a party for people they always can come back to. So to achieve this credibility, you have to create a very loyal customer base. And you can do this by only, you know, always giving your 100% for each client. So each client that you treat them the same as the other one. Doesn't matter whether he's going to spend 5K or 500K. You treat him the same. And I think what made us special is that we opened the doors for younger guys. Because usually when you know, back in the day, when as a young guy you wanted a watch and you went to one of the authorized dealers, it was very closed. It was not very welcoming. It was not very open and warm. It was often stiff and older people. And we were like, no, we are young guys. And we like to help those young guys out there who want watches. So we opened the doors for them. And we did this actually by our approach. Because to be honest, when I'm talking to a client, it's actually the same way as I'm talking to you. It's not different. There's no difference in there. And that's genuine.
Very human.
Yeah, and I think people can sense this, because people, you know, they tend to think, hey, this guy is genuine. This guy is really, and it's true, because most of my best clients are really friends of mine, actually. And that's actually what you want. You want to create friendships, maybe, instead of a client relationship. Maybe it sounds a bit corny, actually, but that's maybe a bit of our approach, what we did.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's corny. I think it relates back to the fact that you focus on a more long-term approach than a short-term, like, just making money. Like, you're really building a relationship, and that may cost you some money in the beginning, because you're not upsetting whatever watch you have in the store, but you're actually listening to your clients, you're actually paying attention to their needs, and just by doing that, I think you distinguish yourself from a big part of the people that are in this business.
Yeah. But also, I like to do business more with, for example, a guy like you than an old gray guy who I don't have any, like, how do you say, where I'm not interested in and he's not really interested in, and I cannot relate to him and he cannot relate to him. I'd rather do business with a guy like you, and I talk about the same stuff as I would do to my friends. We can talk about stuff that we're discussing here, but we can also talk about, you know, stuff that guys talk about when they're amongst each other. I think that's nicer than, you know, talking to all the other typical watch clients.
That makes sense. What is some advice that you would give to a younger person that's very interested in watches and that would want to start in this business? He has seen your success. He has seen Jasper do a lot with his business, and he's like, okay, this is what I want to do. This is my calling. Where should they start?
Start working for a company that does what you want to do. That's where you should start. So if you like Amsterdam Vintage Watches, try to apply there. And if they are not hiring, try to apply the company close to Amsterdam Vintage Watches, or another company, maybe not close to Amsterdam Vintage Watches, but that is at least operating in the sector, in the business that you want to be in. And here you can learn the tricks of the trade. Here you can learn and build experience, create a network, gain knowledge. You can learn everything here. And then when you've built up a decent track record and you've, you know, your own customer base, or you've gained a lot of experience by doing a lot of business, And if you have the ambition to start for yourself, you can do it then. But first, I would say start working for someone who, or a company who does what you want to do.
You think it's important to have a mentor in life? Because it comes down to the same thing, right? Like you're saying absorb knowledge from something that's actually valuable.
Yeah. I think it's important, yeah.
Have you had mentors in your life? Obviously, you've worked at a very good company that certainly helps you a lot.
Yeah.
But were there other people that had a big impact on you?
Not so much. This is something that I maybe sort of missed in my life. Although I have to say, my current business partner is a bit older than me, and I don't want to give him the credits of being my mentor, but I learned a lot of him, and I can see the value of having a mentor. But no, for me, no, this was maybe something that I was missing in my life.
Because you decided to move to Dubai to a certain point, right? And mm-hmm. and you moved your business here. What was it like to make that step? Because like I'm sure you were very comfortable in Amsterdam, mm-hmm. and then you decided to take some kind of leap of faith. Mm-hmm. Go to another country, new possibilities, new people. What was that like?
Well, I've always had ambition to live abroad. I mean, Amsterdam is nice, especially in the Netherlands. I think it's a nice city. But I've always liked to, you know, get exposed to other cultures, other people, other languages, other kitchens, or other cuisines, I mean. And for me, moving to Dubai was actually, it was a very logical step. It made sense because I was already traveling a lot between Dubai and Amsterdam, back and forth, because most of my clients from the Netherlands migrated to Dubai. So to maintain this relationship, I was there a lot. So for me, it all made sense. It was the next step, moving to Dubai. I was here already every month.
What's it like to live here?
What's it like to live here? I think, really, if you're a young guy and you want to make money, Dubai is the place to be. I think it's one of the best places in the world to be. And I have traveled quite some places. And of course, there are, you know, Dubai, it's not only only glitter and glamour. Of course, it has some downsides, like maybe it's kind of superficial. But really, if you're young and you have like entrepreneurial ambitions, you want to make money, you want to be exposed to other businesses and people making money, you want to build your network, Dubai is the place to be. Really, the quality of life here is high. Ease of doing business is it's very easy to do business here. Really, you could go to a restaurant, for example, my business. I go to a restaurant, I see a guy wearing a nice watch. I go to him, I say, hey man, you're wearing a nice watch. And I get to talk with this guy, we exchange numbers, and the next day you contact him and boom, can be a client. It's really like this. This can happen because Dubai attracts people who want to make money or spend money or both. And this is actually, this is quite perfect. If you're an entrepreneur like me, buying and selling watches, either people want to make money with you, so they're like, okay, maybe I have clients for your watches, or they want to spend money. They want to buy watches themselves. I think Dubai is one of the best places to be.
Do you see yourself living here for a long time?
For the coming 5 to 10 years, yes. Yes, I think so.
Where do you think you and your business will be in 5 to 10 years?
Eventually, I also want to extend my business from watches to other collectible items. I actually am very interested in, for example, art, or classic cars. And I think it's very nice to have a business in, let's say, 4 or 5 years that is not only focused on collectible watches from the past, but also collectible cars, collectible art, and to have a gallery, a museum maybe, where I can expose everything. I think that would be the next step in collector's gallery.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
You're just hearing this, like I can completely imagine it.
Yeah, no, but it's really actually, when I was thinking of a company name, my business partner and I said to each other, we should not put watches in it, because then it's only, your business is only focused on watches. And we already had a sort of the vision that one day we want to extend business to other things, like classic cars, like the very collectible cars, or art, or whatever. So we already had the vision of extending business to that before we set up the company. So this is actually where I eventually would like to go.
It's very nice. I never knew that. I think no one, like, you haven't told it publicly. At least I haven't read it anywhere. So
no.
But I can see it happening. I see it happening, walking into a nice gallery with nice
music playing
in the background.
It's very
music.
Unique here in Dubai. You don't have it. I mean, it's very unique, because I think you don't have a place like this in the entire world. But especially in Dubai, which is very focused on modern stuff and blingy, and it has to be just as new as possible. I think it's very nice to have a classic gallery with cool vintage cars and watches and art, where people who appreciate the past can be. And
do you think that the things that you would be selling would mainly attract people that are collectors, or will there also be a lot of investors? And I'm also interested in that, like, now, for example, are most people that buy your watches, because they're vintage watches, so they're collectible items, they're very special, do people see it as more as an investment or something?
No.
That they...
No, not as an investment. I don't sell watches as investments. It's true that the watches that I sell are rare and collectible, so they are, generally speaking, good investments. But I will never sell a watch as an investment. Why? Because I'm not a financial advisor. And I also think an investment is, for example, you invest in a company, and that company satisfies a certain need, and if it does as well, your shares in that company, the price of it will rise. So the company really does something. That's an investment. A watch doesn't do anything. It tells the time.
Yeah.
So to me, a watch is not... If it was a financial instrument, a watch would be a speculation, not an investment. But I also think that a watch is not a speculation, because I think you should buy it with the purpose of enjoying it, of wearing it. Because it's, you know, especially a vintage watch, it has a story. It's collectible. It's nice to see. It's nice to wear. And I think if you buy something that you enjoy, it's always a good investment or speculation or whatever you want to call it. But I will never sell a watch as an investment.
Something I've heard a lot recently, I'm not an expert on this, so please correct me if I'm wrong, is that a lot of people that have very nice watches are mm-hmm. scared to wear them.
Mm-hmm.
Not in Dubai, but mostly in all the other places in the world, but mm-hmm. Dubai.
Yeah.
Could you maybe elaborate a little bit on that and like explain how you see that, and if that is something that you've experienced yourself?
No. To be honest, a lot of people are talking about this, like this is only happening recently, but this has always happened. People were always robbed for stuff. I mean, I think in Amsterdam back in the 80s and 90s, you could not even wear... You were not able to wear a gold Rolex. Nowadays you can. Yeah, the risk is there to get robbed. And that's shitty. I think that's really actually a downside of living in, well, Western cities like Amsterdam, but also London, also New York. It's a downside, I think, and it's a shame that it's like that. But I think it has always been there, but only recently people have been paying attention to it, because you know, some celebrities got robbed, and then it's, you know the media, how they will portray this, that it's very dangerous to wear a Rolex. I think you're still fine if you wear a Rolex. Just don't get shit faced in the bar and then walk outside in Amsterdam in three in the night with your golden Rolex on. Yeah, then that's not the smartest move. But
I've watched a Vice documentary also about I think watch robberies in London, and they said that the only way that they can find people that wear those watches is through social media. It's artists that are flashing their three different Rolexes on one, like,
don't do that.
Yeah,
I always post things when I already left the place, when I already left the scene. So here in Dubai, I don't care. Here in Dubai, it's Dubai is one of the safest places in the world. But for example, in Amsterdam, when I'm at a restaurant, I only post it when I already left the scene, when I'm already home or somewhere else. Or it's a precaution you have to take.
Some good advice for the youths, I think, to not everyone has to know what's going on, where you are. Maybe, but if you do it, then do it with caution. And I think, like before the podcast, I asked you, what direction do you want this conversation to go to? And you mentioned I would like to have a positive impact on the youth. If I can like inspire one or two guys that are watching this, that are young and hungry, and they want to better their lives, I would like for them to, you know, make something click. Is there some advice that for people that are listening to this and they're like, wow, like I can really relate to his story. I come from the same position, from a humble background, and I want to make something out of myself. What is something that you would tell them, and perhaps something that they can think about and implement in their life to become successful one day?
So, So first of all, it's true. I don't see myself as a role model for people, not at all. I'm, like I said to you, I'm not there yet. I'm on my way, and I'm doing very well. But if I could be an inspiration to some people, to me that would be very satisfying. I think you're a cool guy, but to be honest, I only do podcasts if I know I'm gonna get business out of it. But the reason I like to do this is because I think the people that listen to your podcast, I think it's quite unique, because you're talking, or you're your public, these are guys I can relate to. Because if I look back to the 10-year younger Ramon, I'm 29 now, so if I look back to when I was 18 or 19, I did not have role models like myself. The people I looked up to were, you know, the rappers. Because these were the only guys, or the hustlers even, these were the only guys in my environment that I saw who had the cars and the clothes and the girls, and, you know, they could do and go wherever they wanted. And that's what I wanted. I could relate more to them than to, and I'm not being racist here, but to a white businessman who was from a very different background than me, who had a very supportive family, a nice education, whereas I came from something completely different. So, yeah, I think it's very nice for younger guys to maybe also have to see someone who did it in a different way. I mean, you don't have to be a rapper. You don't have to be an athlete, you don't have to be an influencer, and you don't have to be like some self-help guys are telling you. You don't have to be a high school dropout. I finished my education. I started working for a company as an employee, a simple sales clerk, and now I'm here, an entrepreneur. And I think one of the things that I want to give to them, or would like to give to them, is just keep working hard and have faith. Like, you asked me, what would you say to the younger Ramon? I told you, I would say it will be fine. Because eventually, if you work hard, it will all be fine. Opportunities will come on your path. Really. That's how life works. You attract it, I think. Does that make sense?
It does. And you mentioned faith. I'm interested, this was not in the question list, but if you'd like to answer it, are you someone that's spiritual? Do you believe there's something more?
I'm very I'm very realistic.
Okay.
So I like facts, I like science, I like things I can see, but yeah, I do believe there is more, definitely. There, and I do believe that if you're a good person, if you put in the right energy, you will receive. I really believe in the law of attraction, if you want, people call it that way.
Yeah.
I really believe in that. Yeah, no, it's not a question of belief. That's 100% true. When, for example, when I was living in Amsterdam and I wanted to go to Dubai, every morning when I woke up, I told myself, okay, I'm going to live in Dubai. I want to live in Dubai. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I'm going to live in Dubai. And then I was traveling to Dubai for my clients, and I was here, and I was like, man, I'm going to live in this place. Every day I was saying this until I started believing this. And when you start believing it, you will say it to other people, because first I only said it to myself. And then I was telling to other people, yeah, I actually want to go to Dubai because I think it's a very nice place to do business and blah blah blah. And then when you start putting out the word, the energy, and you're consistent with believing in it, an opportunity will come on your path. And now I'm here in Dubai. And that's because of the law of attraction, I think. Because to be honest, 1 year or 1 year and a half ago, I was saying to myself, I'm going to live in Dubai, I'm going to do business in Dubai, I'm going to have my own company, I'm going to make money. I did not know how. I was still working at Amsterdam Vintage Watches. I was an employee there. I was living in Amsterdam. And I every morning I said to myself, I don't know how, but it's going to happen.
It's beautiful. I think you have a very nice career path. And also that, like, I think the thing that really made me want to, like, have this conversation is after I sent you the question list, you were like, I think there's a lot of noise right now in the markets. Like,
yeah.
You see social media, things have to go fast, you have to be there.
Yeah.
School, fuck that, it's not important. Like, yeah. Just work, like, and I'm a third year architecture student. I worked my ass off to get into the uni. It's pretty, like, it's highly ranked, it's TU Delft in Holland, and like I always felt like, yeah, I'll just stop uni, like maybe I'll just stop and I'll just do some work, but then I was like, no, I think I started this, I need to finish it, and I'll just be patient, like everything will come with in the right time. And just hearing people say that it's possible to do both, to be successful and also just have a degree, or to, like, you know, work as an employee and to learn and then to do your own thing, like I think entrepreneurship is very glorified, but people never talk about the hardships, talk about the lawyers, the taxes, all the things that you have to do. Like, if you're an entrepreneur, you're doing 20 things. You're not just selling watches. You're
no. Selling watches is just a small part of the things that I do on a daily basis.
Yeah.
Like, all appointments I have are with the contractor for the boutique, with the lawyers, with the accountant, with parties to make these... Also, these silly things that you have to think of, like, you know, merchandise for my company, and all this stuff it's taking a lot of time. And actually, buying and selling watches is a small part.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, like, it's good to mention that as well, so people get realistic expectations of what it's like to be an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. And that it's not everyone has to be an entrepreneur. Like, you can also just be very successful being the second man in the company and doing really well.
It's perfect.
It removes all the stress. You get a lot of reward.
Yeah. I can imagine that for a lot of people, that's perfect. And I think, you know, like what you're saying nowadays, people, you're only good if you're an entrepreneur. But to be honest, if you work in a company, you have a nice position, or you're working towards a nice position and you're happy, then you're good, man.
Yeah.
Who cares?
Is gratefulness something that you actively exercise?
Every morning.
Could you elaborate on that?
So, every morning when I wake up, before I tell myself where I want to be. So what I did when I told myself I'm going to be in Dubai, before that, I always take a moment to just briefly think of what I'm grateful for. And this is always the basics, like I'm healthy, my beloved ones are healthy, I have a home, you know, I'm safe, I can receive and give love to the people close to me. You know, it's always these basic things that you get back to, because these are only the things that matter actually. When you have these, you're like really, you're invincible.
Yeah, it makes sense. I think I'm going to ask you a pretty repetitive question, but it's the success show tradition. I always ask at the end of the podcast, Ramon, what does success mean to you?
I read this question, so I thought about it. To me, success is getting up, being busy all day. And it does. So a lot of people say, yeah, you have to do something that you love to do. You have to find your passion. Fuck that shit. I mean, when you're an entrepreneur, some days you will do shit that you hate to do, but you have to do it. And in the end, you will still have a good feeling because you did it and you know it's for the greater good, for your company or whatever. So to me, success is getting up, making moves, doing stuff, and in the end of the day, you lay in bed and you're like, wow, I did a lot today. And I enjoyed it. Or maybe I did not enjoy it, but I enjoy the fact that I've done it, that it's done, that it's finished. I think that's what success is, right? I think.
I agree. I think I listened to something very interesting, and it was Jordan Peterson, and he was talking about that some people say that all they want in life is being in Jamaica and having margaritas. Mm-hmm. It was like, that's just a week in a year. If you stay there for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, you're going to get bored.
Yeah.
Like, there needs to be hardships in your life. You need to have struggle. You need to do something that sucks in order to appreciate those moments.
Find joy even in the moments you don't enjoy.
Yeah.
Find joy in the fact that you will finish this task and then you've done this. Find joy in the thought of that or something. I don't know. But to me, success is just having a full day of working, doing different stuff, being everywhere. And then in the end of the day, and I'm laying in my bed and I'm like, wow, I did a lot. I'm tired. That's what success is. This is what I could do every day. I like this more than chilling the whole day at the beach or the pool or whatever. Of course, this is also nice every now and then, but having a productive day, I like that.
Thank you so much for your time, Ramon. I think, including me, you've inspired, like, you inspire a lot of young people. And like,
I hope so.
Like for me, like, when I saw your account, like, I just saw photos of, like, it's nice, looks fancy, say magnifique in French, like it looks like like it's fine, but then like there has to be something more behind this. Mm-hmm. And I think by like opening yourself up to talk with me, I know your time is very, like, very valuable, and you're coming here all the way from I don't know where you were in Dubai, but spending time, I really appreciate it. And I think, including me again, like, you inspire a lot of people, and it's nice to see that.
I hope so.
You also share the hardships. It's not just the nice watches. It's also waking up in the morning, having to go to a client, not being able to sell, going to the next one. Like, those hardships are also important to mention. I don't think it's done enough. And hopefully with the show, we can also inspire some more people and do something good.
I hope so, man. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
I'm the most brutal and efficient and most ruthless champion there's ever been.
Yesterday, you said tomorrow. So just do it!
You should be a monster, and then you should learn how to control it. It all comes from life lessons, and the lessons are learned through struggle.